IVM.
Hello and welcome to Simplify, the weekly talk show with three intelligent hosts. One to four intelligent hosts. Phew. It's
like hey, we are a talk show.
Advanced. We are a talk show, of course. What is a podcast but a talk show?
What is it? I don't know.
Anyway, we also don't know. We have stopped trying to define for Simplified a long time back, but what we do.
There is this reference about the Terry Wogan show in Yes Prime Minister or Yes Minister, one of the two. And the footnote is, like in the book form, Terry Wogan show, footnote, a talk show popular in the late 70s. Terry Wogan talked and everyone listened, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a talk show.
So
yeah.
He was famously loquacious, I suppose. I haven't seen the guy, but yeah.
Okay, so once in a while, which the while being a month, we decide to get together random facts, pieces of news that, you know, don't warrant an entire episode by themselves, but still think will make for interesting simplified fodder.
This is Half Pints, which I think is a fairly interesting format. I think it's also a good time to seek feedback from our 2.5 listeners to say, do you enjoy
Do you like Half Pints? Do you want us to do more with it? Or have you not noticed? So that would be you. So 2.5 is actually a good number because I don't know why we chose Half Pints itself as a name. I think the first time we did it, I got inspired to write a microbrewery themed intro for everyone. And it should technically have been quarter pint, I suppose, in which case together you would have got one pint of simplified.
Pints is the standard below threshold to be able to drive,
drive. I thought it was safe for your
two standard liver. Drinks is legally allowed, I think.
In India, the guy, you have to see the, I don't know how it is now, but back in the day, they would roll the window down and one constable put his head inside, right into your face and ask you your name. And poor guy, I mean, you had to, you know, not good detection rates, but every now and then you're going to get people who haven't brushed their teeth or eaten garlic Manchurian balls, whatever.
This is very famously, I think, if I'm correct, as Krish Ashok had mentioned, that I think there is a bar in Chennai, I think it's called Maris, and they would, once you finish drinking, they would give you a garlic rasam. Which is the only purpose of it is to basically
to mask.
foul up your mouth so much that in the days when a breathalyzer was not there, cops would be like, please, just drive along. If you want some Gopal Palpudi, I will give it to you. Gopal Palpudi being tooth powder, which is...
This is very interesting. So in this Half Pints episode where we are supposed to give random half pint sized facts, we have already
prepared with,
we already have given some 4 or 5 chakna size snacks already.
Yeah.
So,
free.
In the spirit of our last episode, in the spirit of the last episode that we did, Tony, which you will remember a week back, in which we interviewed Nitin and we were speaking about how Test cricket birthed ODI and then that became T20, it's very likely that Simplified is actually the original format is the Test format and then Half Pints was the experimental ODI format and then we might end up being chakna. So, we might have to start doing things like TikTok dances or whatever's next evolution.
And we are not going to be niggardly like world famous Gokul Hotel. Gokul, I think. The restaurant opposite Baghdadi, I think. So there is a Bademia there.
Correct.
There is a Baghdadi restaurant. And then there is
Kolaba.
This Gokul. Kolaba. Yeah. So Gokul is, used to be in my day, the only place there which served beer. And with every bottle of beer, you would get a bowl of something called cheeselings. And it was very sort of strictly rationed. So one bottle, so the guy behind the counter would actually count the cheeselings and give. But Simplified is not like that. When we give our half pints, we give out the chaknas with generosity. So
yeah,
we are better than Gopal.
All right. So I think we should actually get started with our facts now. So I have one. This is actually not very recent. I put it away in my simplified half pints bookmark folder on my browser. And I needed to come out with one quickly before this recording. So I'm invoking this from last November. The headline is, "The guy who inspired the quiet quitting moment is back to working 50 hours a week."
He's quietly back to working 50 hours.
Yeah. I mean, there are some nuances, etc., to this, but let's not get into those right now. Why get nuances get in the way of a sweeping statement? Is this like sort of like an indication that the that power has shifted back to employers, that is no longer, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there's a sign like that? I mean, we did do an episode on quiet quitting during the pandemic and spoke about how people are finding meaning
in different
cultures and all that. We did a review, and the quiet quitting became, it ended up becoming something else. But I thought this headline was particularly fascinating because the guy who inspired it apparently is back working. Of course, he's happy and all that, so claims the article or his interview. But I mean, what do you guys think? Like, it's things have more or less gone back, you know, to what.
So the entire, the entire effort of the US Federal Reserve was to bring unemployment numbers up, right? They wanted to, so they were wringing their hands and fretting about the fact that US had full employment. And the reason was money supply was so cheap that anyone with half a business idea could get funded and start something. And people did. So, it's every, that had the effect of soaking up a lot of employees. And in general, because, you know, of the multiplier effect, every sector. So I know someone who's a doctor in the United States, and he was telling me that they were having difficulty finding nurses and, you know, hospital attendants and things like that. Like, simply no applicants, zero applicants. They'd put ads and there would be no applicants at all. And that was because everyone was gainfully employed. Everyone was getting good wages at doing whatever they wish to do, and oftentimes very conveniently located. So, you know, you would obviously prefer a job which is closer to your house than, you know, something which is further down and so on. And then they realized, finally these guys figured out that, hey, this is happening because we are printing a lot of money. And then they stopped printing the money, and then they wanted to pull that money back in. So they increased the interest rate, and all that thing happened. And all of a sudden, people started losing jobs. So a lot of layoffs in the tech industry, and it must have had multiplier effects. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it does appear that easy jobs are, jobs are not easy to come by in the US.
Easy money.
Yeah, no, also jobs. So, you know, people cut. Okay, yeah. So you could basically just walk in and get a job anywhere, anytime for doing anything. And that's no longer the case. And quiet quitting movement was basically a movement to kick employers in their nuts for being insensitive to the, you know, wishes or the preferences or desires of their employees. So that seems to have turned a full circle.
Yeah. So this is what you said is, yeah, I mean, I just one question to that, Naren. So what you painted out was a largely US phenomenon, right? So do you see something similar like that happening over here? I mean, of course, there, because the US is the biggest economy and all, there will be like ripple effects. Like if a company goes bust in the US, they're likely to have their Indian vendors and all that also suffering. But apart from that, that connection, do you see this happening in Indian companies as well? Like as a, sorry, Tony, this goes for you as well.
Yeah. So I'll go first. I know the manufacturing sector well, and the sectors that I know are doing very well. So automotive sector, general engineering sector, you know, they have a lot of work. There's a lot of employment. Indeed, a lot of companies have trouble finding quote unquote good manpower. So we have a lot of people. We have a lot of engineers. Many of them are raw. So we have our standard of technical education is not great. So when a graduate emerges out of a college, he's not straight away employable on the job. Needs to be trained and taught the skills of the tools of the trade. So anecdotally in manufacturing, it's great. And anecdotally from people I know in the software space, they say it's pretty good there as well still. So I don't know what Tony's...
So a couple of things, right? What ended up happening as a result of the pandemic was that everyone over-indexed on an outlier event, which had never happened so far.
Yeah. Right?
And everyone predicted a massive shift to digital, metaverse, remember that, all of that nonsense, right? So thankfully, because of the advance of science and everything and vaccines and all of that, we came back to normalcy very quickly before anyone realized, right? And then like your good old HR principles stood true, right? Which is that the only way to build a company culture is Stockholm syndrome, right? Hmm. Which is that you need people sharing the same cultural context by being in the same campus for hours on end so that they sort of feel more empathy towards each other. And it's not just about productivity, right? In a manufacturing setup, perhaps if you do your thing, like then it doesn't affect anyone else. Whereas in a lot of large companies, software or otherwise, a lot of what gets done is a function of collaboration, right? And you're more likely to collaborate with someone whom you've even shared a local train ride with, right? Doesn't matter if you're smelling his armpits, you still feel like you're, you know...
All the more reason to collaborate, I feel.
Yeah, more to him than a random person on team. So
at the end of the day,
I think Yuval Noah Harari talks about myths. It's about myths and rituals, right? It's about, I think one of my most favorite tweets of all time is from Braticus on Twitter, who said, every time I see R. Ashwin come into bowl, I can see him taking off a Cognizant lanyard and giving it to the umpire before he bowled. Right? So those shared trauma, those shared memes, all of that went away during the work from home period.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've reached a place where companies have overestimated sort of demand from that side and are actively trying to sort of let go of that capacity and at the same time come back to a state where they can sort of drive certain things, which is like physical close proximity, what you call ambient awareness, right? It's not just about the meals you're copied in on. It's about like understanding the dynamics between whoever is on the floor and who comes in from the next floor and you know who you should say what to get things done. So I think it's a reversion to what was our old normal, and I don't see going back to the digital way anytime soon.
Yeah, that was very interesting. Maybe we should do a separate episode just on what, you know, has COVID actually really changed anything? Because to me, it kind of feels like, hey, things are back to where they were in March 2020. But maybe that's a longer discussion for the other day, for another day. There are, of course, some things that have changed and all that. To your point, Tony, it always, you know, even during the pandemic, even when we didn't know when things were going, it kind of seemed very weird to me to see the valuation of companies like Zoom,
Zoom.
And you had to think that, okay, listen, how big can this actually get? Like, eventually we are going back to offices, or even if we are all going to stay at home, how much Zoom are we actually going to use? And it doesn't surprise me at all that many of these companies are getting a reality check. And maybe that's the arc of history. I think it might be an overall, the corrections are always good in the long run, I'd like to think. But anyway, that is my fact, and we have discussed than I thought.
Chuck, if we can like spend a couple of minutes, as someone who's like sort of taken the freelancing route and sort of not really relied on companies per se, what is your take on the whole thing? Where do you see the future of work going per se? Maybe the creator economy versus the large conglomerate. I mean, that's a very wise bet.
I think that's something we can do an entire episode on. But I think from a company point of view, okay, so me personally, I don't miss it at all, right? If I were still working, I would prefer to be working from home 3 or 4 days a week. And we called into office only when, you know, there are actually meetings, brainstorms, etc. To happen. But, and that's, I think, also a function that a lot of my working life has been in Bombay, a city that is brutal for, you know, commute and all that. And I'm sure my folks who are listening to this in Bangalore traffic will also sort of but
shout out to them, by the way, our largest listener base.
Our largest listeners. Thank you, Silpur Junction, for
our lobbying.
You know, by the way, that the three of us, we actually take, never mind, actually, this might not be the best joke to make at this point of time, but never mind. But the larger thing about the future of work itself, see, I think it's going to be hybrid in some way, right? I think, especially in the knowledge economy, we have got a taste of work from home, and there are some advantages that it has, and there are some disadvantages that it has. I think the companies that are going to crack this are people who are, one, going to allow hybrid work, and two, have an actual reason to call people into office, right? I think it's kind of unreasonable to expect that everybody is going to willingly, happily show up for 5 days a week. All right, make it 2 days a week, but then structure things so that those 2 days a week in office are actually worth it. Have meetings on those days, have team, whatever, have all your creative brainstorms, etc. on those days. And even if you're operating in a fully remote model, have deliberate collisions happening either via outings or, you know, force physical brainstorms to happen. I think having clarity as to why people should come back to office or aggregate in a particular space, I think those are the kind of companies and models that will succeed, I feel.
Yeah. So I think, again, like, that's the whole bottom line, right? Is that organizations say they value productivity. The actual path to productivity is not productivity itself, but imbuing a sense of purpose to each individual person. And that happens more readily in a physical setting than, you know, dispersed online. I think that's where we're netting out with this.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Yeah.
So, okay, let's move on to
that's
next.
That's my fact. I don't think I have too much else.
But that was beautiful. The guy who proposed quite quickly is back to working 50 hours a day. Yeah.
All right, cool. Want to go next?
Yeah, so I'll go next. My fact is equally serious and grim. It is that the high heel shoe.
Okay, before you say it, my fact is actually hopeful. So stay with us till the end of the app. Okay, go on with your grim fact.
Yeah, grim fact is that the high heel shoe was actually worn by the Persian cavalry way back in the 11th century. In the 10th century and 11th century. And they did that. So, you know, they were shoes like our present day shoes with the heel, the toes down, heel much higher. And they had this useful feature of being able to get stuck in the stirrups, right? So you sit on a horse and you put your feet through the stirrups. The heels sort of give you a purchase on that. So they used to do that, and there was something called a Great Schism in the 11th century. The Great Schism was, so the Christian church broke into two. So there was the Western church and there was the Eastern church. And they were like, you know, they started having all sort of disagreements on very serious things, like whether they should use unleavened bread or leavened bread for the Eucharist, something like that. So very important. Anyway, that broke apart the Christian world. And the Pope decided in the 11th century to start wearing red high-heeled shoes for whatever. So I love
red high-heeled shoes.
And this was continued, and the heels got higher and fancier. And in the 17th century, the French nobility, they also started wearing wigs and frocks, and I'm pretty sure thongs underneath all of that. And so that was kind of fun. It took all the way up to the 19th century, or even later than that, 1900s actually, the 20th century, for it to become a woman's product again. And that was thanks to advertising. And so that was my fact for the day. So my question, of course, to you people is, the very important question is, have either of you worn high heel shoes?
I mean, not high heels.
It's a safe space. You can say, you don't have to worry about. Anyway, I remember we only have 2.5 listeners. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have once for a school play, I think, but it was in fourth grade or something. But yeah, I mean, whenever I won it later, I'm like, why? Like, why would anyone
Doesn't trekking count? Because technically it does have a high heel, except that the high heel is distributed throughout and not just one butt. Does that still count? Does that still count as a...
No, we are talking. I've worn another. The reason I'm talking so proudly and confidently and with a, if you see me now, you will see a glow of happiness on my face. That's because I have done this for like a good hour or so. This was, I lost a bet then.
Like today or 10 years back?
No, a few years, maybe a few decades ago, yeah.
Walk us through why you were in that situation. You were just testing?
Yeah, no, I was, I said, you know, that women make a big deal about having to walk in high heel shoes and things like that. And my wife promptly gave me a pair of high heel shoes and says, wear this for 1 hour and report. And I did. It's terrible, man. It is crazy. It is insane. It is insane. I'm never going to poke fun at women's clothing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean that, and they have no pockets also.
Oh God. Okay. So I was, while we were talking, I was actually furiously Googling to see if it can connect the two facts to say is there a high heel in
I
think the original one was the hemline index, right? Which says
hemline index. Sorry, yeah, that's what it's like.
The skirt length. Which one is it? Rise or fall along?
I think skirt length
gets shorter in good economic times. Is that it?
No, during bad economic times, because they want more tips. I think that's the theory that I had heard.
Something like that. Yeah. One of those. Sexist.
The hot waitress index also. You heard of the hot waitress index?
I think that's... Tell. Narendra.
Yeah. So hot waitress index is the hotter the waitress is, the worse the economy. Because if you're a hot woman and you're forced to become a waitress, it means that there are no other jobs available.
Okay. Mm.
Right. All this various
I'm sure we can come up with a high heel index very easily.
What would be logical? Come on, like how do we make high heels sort of like a economic indicator? High heels are worn during, I don't know, what kind of events?
During COVID, I'm pretty sure high heels went down in consumption. Like no one was wearing high heels. You're like looking at comfortable footwear and like... No one's objectifying you, but as the economy gets tighter and more interviews you have to go to, I'm guessing anything that gives you a leg up, considering that the world is full of
leg up.
I see what you
patriarchally horny men. Yeah, like it's possible that high heels would have seen a uplift in that sense.
Are you coming up with these on the spot, by the way?
Do you see?
Like I understood the first two you made on your own, but are you still at all coming up with them?
Superb. By the way, as people who grew up watching WWE, do you know what face and heel means?
Yes, I do.
That's not it. No. Okay. What is face?
No, I don't. No idea. What might it be? Two people?
Yeah. So yes, basically WWF thrived on creating, random sort of narratives. Right? So a face is anyone who the crowd supports, like Bret Hart would be a prime example, right? But a heel is anyone who's like jeered upon by the crowd, like a Vince McMahon, for instance. He owns the damn thing, but he'll still like play a terrible character just so that the crowd can boo him and feel happy about it. So Vince McMahon was the highest heel in the history of high heels, probably, in that sense.
Oh, apparently. And here's another fun fact. I'm just coming up to a random website. I don't know how true this is, but apparently because the aristocracy, including men in the 17th century, used to wear high heels to show off their nobility and all that, that's the origin of well-heeled, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah, I always thought it was traveled. Well-traveled, I thought was why it was well-heeled.
What about get off your high horse?
Sorry?
Get off your high horse, which brings me to my second favorite tweet of all time, because I have already labeled something as my favorite tweet of all time. This is from Abhishek Madan, who said very reasonably, why would you get on a high horse to begin with? Like, when you ask someone to get off from a high horse, why are you getting on a horse that's
this is the problem when you have ranches and which grow marijuana as a side gig, right? So you got high horses every now and then.
Yeah, this is true.
All right, that's awesome. Any more heel facts?
No, I just wanted to say that it is basically a function of the, you know, era that we live in, right? I think the famous sort of pun, that's not mine, but one that I love a lot, is that time wounds all heels, as opposed to time heals all wounds.
There's a city in California which requires you to have a permit if you're going to wear a heel over 2 inches of high with less than 1 square inch of bearing surface, it seems.
Oh, this is like some FSI funda in Bombay.
FSI funda, yeah, correct.
There is also this very sinister one. This is a 1680 whatever law in Massachusetts that said that anyone wearing high heels would be tried as a witch.
What?
It's something like that, yeah. It's pretty sinister and macabre, yeah.
Excellent. So are we done with everything that we know about, everything we know and can frantically Google about heels?
About heels, yeah, I think so.
Excellent. In that case, Tony, your hopeful fact now.
I just realized.
After unemployment and what fashion has done to women's legs, giving them all better.
Hey, one more. What song would like a bevy of women wearing high heels, if they're singing, you know, what would the headline be? It'd be, "The heels are alive with the sound of you."
I'm doing a joke. Oh, my God.
Well done. Okay.
So, Chuck, you realize that in a panic, as a new father of 2 kids, I like, my instinct was to say that my fact is hopeful, but in fact it is not. It was telling my daughter to eat vegetables so that she can have a surprise at the end of the meal, and that surprise being that she can do her favorite homework, which is English and not Hindi. So my fact, unfortunately, is not hopeful, but let me begin on a hopeful note by asking you, Chuck, do you know Kelvin Kiptum?
Sorry?
There's this dude called Kelvin Kiptum. Have you heard of him? So Kelvin Kiptum...
Is he a spin-off of CSK?
No. He's the...
Like Washington Sundar.
He is going to be, I am predicting, the first marathoner to break a 2-hour mark in a marathon.
Oh, wow.
Because he's recently in the London Marathon, I want to say, which finished on exactly a month ago, April 23rd, as we record. He recorded the highest time. And the second half of the marathon, he ran in, I want to say, 59 minutes and 30 seconds or something. So I'm guessing a lot of people who listen to Simplified also have sort of marketing facts that they know and would remember Nike's Breaking 2, which was with Eliud Kipchoge when he didn't make it. I don't know if you remember, there was another brand that sponsored his second run, and then he did break it. Do you remember that brand? It was not Nike. So Nike Breaking 2, we all watched famously.
That's very interesting. Is this another shoe brand or is this...
No, it's a... I want to say it's a watch brand. If I get this wrong, I'll be like panned left, right, and center.
Breitling?
No. I want to say it is Ineos, if my memory serves, because my fact has nothing to do with this. Ineos is not a watch company, is it? No, it's not, right? It's some chemicals company. Yeah. It was Ineos, which basically helped him break 2, but that's not an officially recorded record, as it were. And Eliud Kipchoge is now 38, and Kelvin Kiptum is 23. So you heard it first in Simplified that he will break the record. But what my fact was that...
Well, I thought it was a fact to be.
Yeah, it is. But my fact basically is that we assume that all sports records are going to be bettered, right? Like whether it's Usain Bolt or Kipchoge or Sachin Tendulkar or Surya Kumar Yadav or Messi or whoever you think. But there is one eternal sports world record that can never be broken, right? Which is in javelin. So this is Uwe Hohn. I'm obviously pronouncing his name wrong. He's a German javelin thrower who threw the javelin a distance of 104 plus meters, right? Incidentally, he also coached Neeraj Chopra, who won the Olympic gold by throwing close to 90 meters, a full 14, 15 meters shorter than Uwe Hohn. And the reason is that after this throw by Uwe Hohn, which is 104 meters or so, they redesigned the javelin throw so that the throw would be shorter. Why? Because athletics and track and field all happen in the same arena. And you usually have a field which is like a maximum distance of 100 meters, which is safe before you'll hit one of the runners who are also running a 4,000 meter race or whatever on the track, right? So, so I realized that at the end of it is not hopeful, but that we should also realize that there are some sports records that will never be broken, which is especially in javelin, because they redesigned the javelin so the center of gravity is changed and it will travel a shorter distance, but at the same time, not land flat. So it'll poke into the ground, but it'll come short.
Interesting. So there are some records that could technically be broken, but it's quite unlikely because of the way the game is played and all that. And I suppose Bradman's 99.94 is one example of that. And there are some records that can't be broken because of technical changes. Like what you're saying right now. That's pretty interesting. Are there any others you can think of that way?
Yeah, they basically...
I mean, there will be something that falls into either, right?
Sure.
They basically re-engineer
the javelin to make sure that it will land a shorter... It shouldn't go beyond 100 meters. That is the idea, which is very rare in any instance. You really want to go faster, farther, stronger, higher, all of those things, right?
As, and then bone meter quiz contest.
Famously says. Citius, altius, fortius, which is the Olympics motto, which is faster, higher, stronger. But anyway, that was my fact.
That's a very interesting fact. Can you think of any other sporting records that fall into either of those categories? I don't know. I'm just trying to think, not that...
Yeah, existing records can, it's very difficult to think of an existing record that cannot be broken because breaking of records is what makes the sports industry, sports world go, right?
Yeah.
So they constantly, so even in the 2-hour mark was unthinkable. It was just unthinkable, I believe, as early as a decade. Now you have, Eliud Kipchoge actually, they say he broke it, but he's just like, so, you can. So, it's difficult to... Usain Bolt's record, someone came pretty close to that.
It makes you think, should these score, should these records or, the individual achievements or, whatever the numerical number is, should it kind of be normalized over time? Average batting average, what would that be today? Would that be higher? Would that be lower? So I don't know. I remember once long back on Crickinfo, one of the stats guy, I forget who his name was, Anand Krishnan, he had done, I love his studies, right? Where he will take, he'll put together things like the greatest innings of all time and he will have a random formula which he had come up with, like percentage scored and how important that match was. All of these are fairly qualitative in nature, which he somehow found a way to quantify, ran that through Stats Guru, and then he came out with this. I think it was a Veev Richards innings that was 189 or something that came out as the top ever innings in that study that he did. It's kind of interesting, what would Bradman's 99.94 be today? Was Charles Bannerman's whatever that thing that he did, which was the talk of the country then, what would that equivalent be today? Yeah, the 4-minute mile, what would that be today? Would it be a person running a mile in under, half a minute? I don't know what that equivalent would be. So this is kind of interesting. It kind of makes me think that records aren't that relevant beyond a point. The highest team scores in cricket, for instance, just keeps getting pushed every year or two, it seems, right? So that's like an irrelevant record now. I don't know. What do you think, Tony? You're the sports fan.
I mean, rather than records, right? Like, I want to say Michael Phelps probably has the most gold medals in Olympics of all time. Some like 20, 20 plus. But do you know how many medals Dick Fosbury won? The guy who invented the Fosbury.
Just one, I think.
Yeah,
just that one. Just
because after that, everyone realized, oh, this is a better way to jump. So he was just like an out-of-the-box thinker who did something that no one thought could be done. And the moment that he did it in that one Olympics or whatever it was, everyone saw, okay, this is the better way to jump. And like people physically gifted than him just did it. But like the Fosbury flop is still eternally named after him, just like the eternal world record is after Yu Hoon in javelin. So yeah, so these things are nice when even if it's just one medal or like one throw, they're eternal. Yeah.
So that's interesting. I just don't understand this obsession about over records though. The classic in my time was this thing called Guinness Book of World Records. It had it had records for the most ridiculous thing. Most people singing for most hours in the most public place. Just absurd categories. And
but in a way, Naren, it's kind of perfect for the internet age where these all make for very compelling videos to see. So in some sense, it was before its time, and I think it's segued nicely into the content.
And apropos nothing, I just have to share one joke. I was just remembering when it's about this track and field thing. So in a nudist colony, I don't know if I've told you, a few people know. Tony knows about that?
No, I don't.
So yeah, so apparently, you know, they had a nudist version of the Olympics, and it was very popular, except in the men's 4x100 relay race. So there was a confusion over the exchange of the baton, and one of the contestants was dragged across the field for the 100 meters. Yeah, so that was very tragic. Yeah.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is why Simplified was suggested to be the commentary panel for the last Olympics.
My God. We straddle men.
We contain multitudes.
By the way, just about getting leg up, there's this, I think Chuck will know this. This is this very famous piece of commentary from cricket, which caused a huge traffic jam. Where basically this commentator said he couldn't get his leg over. Do you remember this? So basically getting your leg over is apparently some slang for you know, having sex or whatever. So this happened in cricket. One second, let me just get my facts right, keeping in mind that we have editors to keep us honest. This is Jonathan Agnew, who I thought was correct. Brian Johnston. This is Ian Botham's freak dismissal in a test match against West Indies in August 1991. And Botham lost his balance while trying to hook a bouncer from the from Curtly Ambrose, who all we know. And he basically got a hit wicket, right? And Aggers, as he's known, said he just couldn't get his leg over, right? So basically, in that particular moment, everyone's quiet for a second and then everyone just starts laughing. Okay. And apparently, this caused a huge pileup on one of the motorways in England because everyone just pulled up to laugh. So it is amazing. So there's a, actually, I think we should link to this from the show notes on Twitter recently. Now, what is happening, Chuck, to connect our previous episode, is that there are several alternate commentary streams, right? And how you can pay for it is like your super comment or one of those things where you can pay 150 rupees to be featured and all of that. So there is this guy who basically told this panel, which is like not a very celebrity rich panel, saying you guys are the most amazing, you know, panel that I've encountered. You always put a smile on my face, even if I'm having a bad day, whether the, you know, ball is high or at my mid level or, you know, on a not close to my feet. You always make me feel happy. I think it's fair to say you are my low-deca ball, right? And like the anchor is reading this without a change in her expression, okay? And then suddenly, like, about 30 seconds later, the entire panel, starting from the right to the left, slowly realizes what has happened and is falling over each other. So this couldn't get his leg over is one of those moments, but we will...
This is amazing. This reminds me. Yeah, this reminds like, if, yeah. Do you watch a lot of The Simpsons? Any chance? Bart keeps calling in that he keeps calling him what's his name for bartender's name. I forgot the bartender's name.
Mo.
Yeah, that is.
So what does he do?
So he keeps calling
like this.
Yeah, and so he'll call for, is there, I'd like to speak to Mike, so in the bar, oh, yeah. Right? So this guy is like, yeah, Mike who, yeah. So Roch.
Wait, there's actually the Simpsons.
Anyone seen Mike Roch?
Okay, since you guys asked for it.
Practical Jokers, Cranjee, yeah. Basketball, it's just the one that they go for.
So, you will be happy to know, Naren, that Simpsons.fandom.com actually has a list of all of this, okay. Of each of the puns. The episode, the name, as in the person's name,
awesome.
The pun, yeah. Sounds like the replies and notes as well. It's as geeky as you can get. There are fun names like IP Freely, Alcoholic, which I think is okay. Let's go to... let's see. So I'm a wiener, which, come on, you can do better than that. Leaky bum. Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. John will be, okay, never mind. Okay. You know what? Just search for it. You'll find it.
Yeah.
You know the recent thing that Joker. Ligma Johnson?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Somehow, man, that was some epic shit. Somebody wrote a paper and their names were something Ligma and something Johnson. And,
yeah.
And no, everyone fell for that
Johnson
paper.
Johnson and like, yeah. I don't know, Kiran Ligma, some Indian name he gave. Like, it was like Ligma. Yeah. So it's like, Ligma Johnson.
Yeah, Rahul Ligma and Daniel Johnson. Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Okay, this has been a random episode. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Yeah, just want to say Simplified is my low day carb.
Okay, awesome. And on that note, Naren, please, hire us off with something slightly better than that.
Yeah. I did promise hope and I didn't deliver. So what for me the next 15 years?
As yeah.
Fellows tend to do.
So stay safe, people. Stay pointing and stay simplified.